the word mere and the word money sum to the number nine. If you look at other words that sum to nine as well, words like business, love, tax, law, service, health, safe. All of these words add up to nine. And this is why the study of this thing has become so fascinating. I was fascinated by it. I didn't realize that the rabbit hole was that big. And having gone down the rabbit hole quite a way, I'm still fascinated and still literally gathering information on a daily basis. And I can say that because every time something new comes up in the form of a word, or I'm stopping and looking at it and analyzing it, or a situation, I then start to put my mind together and think, ah, this makes sense now.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth.
Kia ora and welcome. I'm Lisa Eyre. Today I have in the studio Peter Vaughan, who is among a number of things, a numerologist and also a mayoral candidate for Auckland. Numerology has its history way before the Greek philosopher Pythagoras. Pythagoras taught that number was the essence of all things. He spoke of cycles, patterns and waves of energy that existed long before the dawn of humanity and how our life paths reflect great and eternal laws, whose origins and purpose remain hidden within the mysteries of existence. Numerology can calculate life paths and highlight difficulties and good times. So welcome, Peter. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, it's interesting that numerology is seen to be all about numbers. Well, numbers is the universal language. We can talk in English, but language is based on numbers. And in fact, back in the old ancient texts, they would swap letters for numbers, numbers for letters throughout. So it's even throughout the Bible. But way back when Pythagoras was around, he was using numbers or the frequencies or the sounds of nature and the universe to understand it. And therefore, he made all sorts of symbols and analogies and taught this to his students in a secret school.
Okay, so do you think numerology was kept a bit secret? Is that why it's not sort of generally out there?
Yes, numerology was unveiled, or it revealed things that nobody else really understood how or why. I recall in one of the scriptures in the Bible, which just happens to read that changing your name changes your destiny. So there has to be something in sound or reasoning that when you change something, you alter its destiny. And that was written in Genesis 17:5.
So anybody who's gone and changed their name, like I have, because I was brought up until the age of 16, I was Anne, and then suddenly I changed it to Lisa.
Right. Is that Anne with an E?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that name means wisdom in itself. And it's also a name that's very active, sensitive. You're sensitive to that degree. But it means that you learned probably a lot with a bit of difficulty, because it's got a particular number with it, number 16. And that sometimes gives you a lot more lesson learning in life, which will benefit you later in life, but it seems harder at the front end.
So I got rid of it and life improved. That is actually a fact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So Lisa means more like people person, like out there and about, chitty-chatty and that sort of thing.
Okay. Well, I'm a bit chitty-chatty on radio, but I don't know about the rest of the time. Okay. So that must be interesting. Every time you meet somebody, you must think, wow, you know, this is this person's personality. I think perhaps we should hide from you, should we?
It's interesting because a lot of people say, do I live by this particular field of interest? No. And sometimes I don't even know what date is. So it doesn't really affect you that way. But when I focus or have to turn on, that's when I become quite aware. It's not just a name. I look at everything on the person, their face shape, their jewellery, their colours, their clothing style, patterns, the whole lot. Even the way that they use their voice and eye movements, they all become profiled.
Okay. So just let me go back to the number part of it. Now, the way that you work out a numerology of a name or whatever is because each of the letters of the alphabet, you write with a number underneath?
Correct. Now, if I was to say, yeah, well, let's look at the English language, the one I'm most aware of and happy to use, because I'm not bilingual. There are 26 letters of the alphabet in today's world. There were less, but they've now got 26. And each one can be numbered 1 through 26. And if you looked at the first, I'll call them three letters, A, J, and S, they all have a value of 1. And the reason for that is A is the first letter, but J is the 10th letter. And if you happen to add those two digits together or symbols together, 1 plus 0 is 1. And S is the 19th letter. And if you add 1 plus 9 together, you'll get 10. 1 and 0 is 1. So A, J, and S all have a value of 1 when you're doing basic work with numerology. And the letter shape gives it its difference.
The letter shape.
Correct, because each of those letters look differently. In fact, if you look at the letter J, it sort of looks like a fishhook, and it's a fishhook facing to the left. And what that does mean, it picks up information from the past, and it's smart. It's a leader number. Number one, it's like the initiative of someone getting up and going ahead and doing something. And the initiative of the J says, I see something that could be improved. So J people, Jackies, Johns, etc., they've got an edge. That means that they can see something and say, I can improve that. Even look at Japan. They take other people's knowledge and they improve it.
Okay. That's interesting.
Oh, yes.
I'll remember that for my grandson, whose name begins with a J. And so if you're going to look at a person's date of birth, you can still find information as well as through their name?
Oh, absolutely. When we were born, we come out with a body, and there it is, and they put a date stamp on your backside, and that's your birth date. Now, people can change their name, but they can't change their birth date, and they can't change their body per se. Michael Jackson was still a Negro, no matter what his skin colour was. So when I look at a name is like a personality type given to a person. It's like a colour or a set of clothes, and the clothes or the colour cover the body. So we look at a name as being a personality which is developed rather than a body which is fixed. And the birth date is also fixed. So the characteristics of a person, their skills and habits and traits are all tied up in the birthday along with a timing factor. And the name describes their personality type, which is why people with the same first name often seem to have a lot in common.
Okay. I don't think I know any Lisas.
Just as an example, I was once being interviewed, and during the course of that time, I made a comment that every man in the world named David has a major change in their life and living conditions in their 27th year. Well, that was a radio interview, and it was put to the nation, and wanted to know whether any Davids out there would ring in and say, did this happen? And every one in sequence said yes, yes, yes. So this is the kind of thing that I've got enough empirical data gathered to create statistics, to create a science of something that's never been done before. Maybe Pythagoras started things in a unique pattern or a mathematical way, but today's technology has enabled me to discover patterns in hundreds of thousands of people's names.
Okay, and that you have done that yourself?
Yeah, over 40 years, it's not nearly 40 years now. That's when I've done over 280,000 case studies. This is not just names of people, it's names of businesses, buildings, countries, animals, you name it. Well, you name it. And so therefore I've become very au fait with names and how they affect people.
So if you were going to name a pet, for example, you would be very careful what you called them.
Oh, yes. I remember I had an interview with a famous person, a celebrity, and I was introduced to their little dog that was at our feet. And I said, you know, cute little dog, what's its name? And he said, well, its name is so-and-so. And I had another dog like this that died, but its name was the same. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, they're the same name, but they're differently spelt. I went, oh, like Karen. There's nine ways of spelling Karen. It all sound like Karen. And when he mentioned the spelling of the dog's name that had just died, I did the numerology on that name, and he couldn't believe that the personality of that dog was just as I had explained. It's what we put on something that an animal feels. And if somebody said my name was Murgatroyd or something like that, I'd look at them sideways. But to a Murgatroyd who was born Murgatroyd and always called Murgatroyd would accept it as normal. So right. It changes our feelings.
Okay.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. So even though the name sounded the same, the personality was different.
Totally.
The dog.
Absolutely. In fact, that he was surprised. That was David Hartnell, by the way. I can't remember what we talked about, but that was pretty much what he said. And that was fascinating for him to discover that I was able to identify even a pet that wasn't there.
Yes, yes.
Hmm.
And so sometimes people will say to you, Peter, are you psychic?
Well, I answer that one and say, well, everybody is, but I'm going to change the wording to gut feel, because when a woman has gut feel or intuition, we all say, oh, they've got woman's intuition. Well, men have that as well, but they're not as aware of it as women. So I have a great deal of respect for women and their intuition. And so it's not psychic ability, it's understanding that our skin and the hairs on our bodies literally pick up frequencies. Somebody else thinks a thought, and it's transmitted via their electrical energy in their body to the outer world by all the little transmitters all over our bodies and the neuron cells that are firing. We live in an electrical universe, and it's all frequencies, hence number is the unique language.
Okay, so perhaps one would say, if you believe in intelligent design, that the world was created by number.
Well, you could say that. I'd say it's almost like the grooves on an old long-playing record. It's set, and you have to live by the way that it's set. And if the track changes, then sometimes the Earth will flip its poles. It's just in part of that design. It's the way it is. And once you understand it, you realize that there's a pattern in life that can be understood and therefore respected. Because sometimes there are good days and sometimes there are bad days. And it's often that if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you'll wear it. And one good example of that was I flew out of Christchurch on purpose the day before it came down. I was actually teaching down there, and I had four air tickets, and I was working between two weekends. And I thought, no, there's a lot of danger in the middle of this week and the next week. So I bought two more air tickets and flew out on Monday the 21st. And the 22nd of February, the buildings came down that I was in. So I was not in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wow. And that was your intuition?
No, that was me looking at graphs or charts that I produce.
Okay.
And when I see them, then you might say your gut instinct kicks in or you feel different. So when I did that, I checked back. At that time it was my partner. I checked my partner's patterns and they were identical to mine, yet we were born separately. We were different people, but we had the same pattern at the same time. And then, just as the people of Christchurch named it as such, there was a naming date. And from that date, taking Christchurch into consideration, I saw the same pattern. Now, there's no way I could get up and stand and say, everybody, out of Christchurch, the town's coming down. I wouldn't have known that. But there was something in it, my life that was personal. And sure enough, I've got a receipt somewhere at home of the buildings that I was in that came down.
Gosh, yes. Well, the thing is, if you had said something or you had tried to warn people, as Ken Ring did,
that's correct,
subsequently, then you'd have got death threats like he had.
That's correct. In fact, it's really sad. I was with Ken subsequent to that, and we were speaking with a member of parliament, a very senior member of parliament at the time, I won't mention whom, and in a three-way discussion in a private setting, that member of parliament said, the government owes you a personal apology because the government actually knew the danger was imminent.
Really?
Really. In fact, it came out later, they admitted, they understood it was dangerous, that dangerous, but they couldn't tell the commercial sector that or the public. So this was actually mentioned to me behind closed doors.
The commercial sector. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it, how everything is operated around money.
Yes, it is. Unfortunately, money is a good thing. All it is a containment of energy. you do something, you can value that by the money you get, and then you exchange that for somebody else's services or goods. But when you start to take money on as being, it's something for me and I want more and more and more, it doesn't work that way. It's got to be used. It's got to be circulated. And that's what we have problems in society today. Money is hoarded and people are suffering. So money's a really, really big subject in my life of helping people understand that the real value in life is value.
Yes, yes. And of course, if money's an energy, which it is, energy has to move.
And actually, the word money, which numerologically speaking, represents the keyword service or to serve. And if people keep it, it's almost like I'm going to gather so much, a bit like that that Scrat character in the movie Ice Age. They showed him always grabbing this last nut or acorn to put into his acorn tree. He needed every acorn there was on the earth almost, and eventually it just collapsed. He lost a lot. So money means to give and to take, but not to hoard.
Right. Mm. That's interesting. And it's connected with service. Now, that reminds me, because I asked you previously, the numerology for the word mare.
Yes. Well, we worked it out, and it adds up to the number 9. Now, how I say it adds up to it would be to look at the letters of the word mare.
Yes, if you can explain that in detail, that would be good.
All right. M happens to be linear. If you go across the alphabet, it's the 13th letter of the alphabet. So M is number 13. Now, if you add the two numbers together, 1 and 3, you'll get 4. So the letter M in simple form has a value of 4. The letter A afterwards, of course, is the first letter of the alphabet, has a value of 1. The letter Y is the 25th letter of the alphabet. So you add 2 and 5 together and you get 7. Then you've got O, which is the 15th letter. 1 and 5 is 6. And of course, on the end of it is R, which is 18. And 1 plus 8 is 9. So if I add up these numbers, 4, 1, 7, a 6 and 9, if you add them up, I think you get 12. I'll just write it down here because otherwise I'm going to get lost in my own. I know them all off by heart. So 4, 5 and 7 is 12, 18, 27. So mere sums to 27. And if you take 2 and 7 and add them together, you get 9. Money is the same number.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, to serve.
To serve?
Hmm.
Well, I wonder how many mares serve.
Again, it comes back to hoarding.
Right.
Yeah, so the word mare and the word money sum to the number 9. If you look at other words that sum to 9 as well, words like business, love, tax, law, service, health, safe. All of these words add up to 9.
Right.
And this is why the study of this thing has become so fascinating. I was fascinated by it. I didn't realise that the rabbit hole was that big. And having gone down the rabbit hole quite a way, I'm still fascinated and still literally gathering information on a daily basis. And I can say that because every time something new comes up in the form of a word, or I'm stopping and looking at it and analysing it, or a situation, I then start to put my mind together and think, this makes sense now. So I'm able to project ahead and in the past and see events that have happened in people's lives by software I've made. Now, if software can calculate this, it's not spookville. It's actually a law. And the law of frequency and numbers, therefore, must be true.
So, Peter, have you thought about writing a book about it?
Oh, man, so many people, yes, ask me that. I've written so much material in the form of notes for training when I give it to people. I do need to have it in a formalised book. And the unfortunate part for me is time.
Well, if you become the mayor, of course, you won't have time.
well, that would be true. There's a lot going on, for sure. However, the mayor doesn't work 24 hours a day. And I have to say, even not being mayor at this particular point in time anyway, my hours are probably longer than the mayor's hours would be anyway.
Except at the moment when he's campaigning too.
Oh, yeah, he's out there campaigning and he has to campaign.
Yes, yes, obviously.
It's interesting because I wouldn't have taken it on unless I knew that the timing for it was right It then comes down to the energy put in, which energy is also numerical or frequencies, and you're able to see whether or not you actually have a chance. Well, some people don't have chances and some people do. So I'm okay with that, but I've got thoughts in mind about why I'm doing this. I was actually asked to run. I didn't volunteer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, to be really honest, sometimes it's about the journey, not the destination.
Correct. It's all about the journey.
Yes.
It's all about the journey because you don't learn anything at the destination. You've learned it prior to getting there. So the journey is key.
Right. Yeah, so you've been on a very interesting journey for a while.
Oh, have I ever. I mean, even discoveries like when studying everything with people, even death. Death leaves a footprint, and therefore there's a story there. And by studying people's lives and their birth names, and it has to be a birth name, and then you've got their called name, which is often a name change like yours, you can then see two people's lives in the one. And I'm able to identify events that happen at the time of death by purely the circumstances. They might have had a disease. They might have had an accident. It might have been caused by somebody else. But every footprint leaves an identifying pattern for me that I can see the lead up to it, the event, and what could have avoided or been done to avoid that particular event. And I did this with the CEO of 2Degrees Mobile. I was talking to him 4 months. This was a public thing, so it's nothing private. We were at a function, and I was invited along to meet this gentleman, and his wife was there, and he thought that what I was talking about was hoo-ha. And but I was showing him that I had graphs that telecom was going to suffer some big challenges, and so was 2Degrees in 4 months' time. In fact, it was between March and April of 2013 was the date that I had highlighted. Well, he thought this was a nonsense, and right throughout the day, and he eventually left. And the other guests there, of which there were 26, said, "What's wrong with him?" I said, "Oh, he just doesn't want to hear what I have to say to help him out. His business is changing direction big time between March and April of the next year." And this was taking place on the 24th of November the year before. So he gave me his card to email him a couple of times. I did. He just avoided it and didn't worry about it. And I thought no more of it. So on the 30th of March the next year, he flew into the ocean with his wife in their private aircraft, and they both died. And the company changed direction.
Oh, gosh.
Now, I didn't even know that had happened, but for 2 days later, I think it was, or a news bulletin, but somebody called up from America, because it was an American function, it was a Thanksgiving function, and they said, "Oh, my God, you predicted their death." I said, "No." I said, "He had a major change in his life and living conditions, along with his wife and his business. He could have avoided that."
Could he?
Oh, yeah. That's why I got out of Christchurch the day before it fell down.
I see.
It's possible. All the stuff is, to get this knowledge out into the world would help so many people. When you're looking at conditions that could create cancer in people, for example, cancer has a footprint, and I can see it in various organs and under different conditions where stress arises, cancer forms. It's all done on stress. Stress is a killer.
Well, yes, except for what about little children?
What about them?
If they die when they're 2.5 or something.
Oh, okay. No, well, I mean, a child, unfortunately, with some disease or some other condition, that will reflect in the family around them. Because mum and dad and all siblings who will be older will all have a footprint take place when somebody passes through an event. I call it group safe. We've actually made software for it. We beta tested it so we could see if people could be helped along their journey by having close friends and family. If they have something, look, for example, Lisa, if you said, "I broke my fingernail today," and I'm going to go, "Oh, put a Band-Aid around it." But here I am in the studio with you, and somebody gives me a message, "Oh, Lisa's not turning up. She's been involved in a very, very serious car accident, and she's in hospital on life care." And I'd go, "Oh, my God." It's a big difference in emotion. And emotions stand out like a burn, like just really, really strongly on a person's chart. You can see it. So in this instance, if you have a dozen people around in a circle or a whole pile of people on an aeroplane and something happens, they all have the same pattern when the event takes place. And this is where it gets really, really interesting. I do recall the Las Vegas shootings a couple of years back now or thereabouts, where so-called man Stephen Paddock was shooting people from an upstairs balcony. And when I heard this going on, I said, okay, when the guy's name comes out, which it did, and I then looked at him and I saw that, and I went, hello, something wrong here. To me, this man was set up. That's how I looked at it. Mm-hmm. And although it comes into the conspiracy side, which I don't really want to go into, what was interesting after the fact was that 58 people died. I'll call it the kill area because that's where they were having their party and their dancing and whatnot.
Yes.
The coroner in America released all of their names, full names and birth dates. And, of course, they had their death date. So I then did a sum total of 58 people, and every one of them, without question, had two numbers, 11 and 13. Some of them had a 16, but 11 and 13, and they are the ones that leave a footprint behind. And they're not the same as everybody else's. They come from a different kind of area.
When you say they leave a footprint behind, can you explain that? Because, yep. I mean, that...
Okay. We have, every day in our lives, we can have near misses.
Yes.
But we don't get hit.
Yes.
Right. So that could be an 11 or a 13 position and time.
Uh-huh.
Time has a, it's a pattern. And from that, I'm able to make the patterns up and I can see them. And the only way I can prove that is by going back into someone's past and highlighting areas of their past that I couldn't know about, but only they could. And when I mention this happened, or this happened at specific times, and I get confirmation, which is now just 98% of the time accurate. People sit there and go, oh, my God, can you tell me what's coming up? Yeah. It's the same kind of thing. And it's not me driving their life. It's them making decisions at the right time to make their life effective. Because we've all got a lot of potential and a lot of life to live. And by making mistakes or not being awake, we can actually have accidents and problems.
Right.
It's a very responsible job I have, and that's why it's a very, very big job. I was once in another public place. Many people know Bob Proctor from The Secret.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was talking to him for about 5 hours, and he wanted me to meet his CEO, who had bought half of his business, Sandra Gallagher, and she was America's top banking lawyer. She was fascinated by what I did. Well, when Bob said to me, oh, if you long as you have a good positive attitude and you do things throughout life, you know, you're okay. Nothing will go wrong. And I went, well, I didn't say rubbish. I used another word. And I went back and highlighted three times of his past, just off his chart. And he identified every case was exactly as I said it, a business matter, a personal loss, and a health condition to do with his heart. And all three were exactly on time. I had no idea about them. And then he asked me, what about the future? And I said, yeah. So Bob, he was interested, but the fact of the matter is, when a new science comes along and it's not on paper, as you'd get from a university, it's not considered anything but hocus-pocus, perhaps, until it's proven. And right now I've got some professors at the University of Auckland who think some of their students should do doctorates on what I've learned.
Oh, wow.
And that's big stuff.
Well, you see, somewhere in our psyche, we must have some understanding because we talk about if our number's up.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know, if we're going to die, if our number's up.
Yeah.
So it's somehow there, isn't it? And, you know, I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say about suicide because this is a huge issue in New Zealand at the moment.
In fact, it's global.
Yes.
In fact, with a doctor once, I was just getting my normal medical checkup for your license, as you have to get for your car, and my GP said to me, oh, well, the medical journal here, he said, this is interesting. The highest per capita suicide place in the world is Browns Bay in Auckland.
Really?
Absolutely. It's in the medical journals. And when I looked at that, I went, oh, yeah, that makes sense. And this is to me.
Yes.
Because Browns Bay and the word death are the same, numerically. And so it made sense to me. Now, that's not meaning to say that Browns Bay is a bad place. It means it's a place that's got a sort of a sadness around it based on the same vibrational aspects as people have when they're having a bad time. So if you're having a bad time and you're in a bad place, energy attracts energy. Now, this is where the word suicide comes in. Who put the word suicide together?
We don't know, do
Correct.
We?
Correct. So when you say, well, then there's got to be something else that goes with that. And this is where my interest got in. And it's again, it's not about numbers. It's about the individual characters which create letters and numbers. So in using that, If you look at the letter S, it's very unstable. If you stood it up on a table, it would wobble. It would, you know, move backwards and forwards. And so, therefore, the S represents instability.
Right.
The letter U, which is like a cup, it follows the S, and it says, if I'm emotionally unstable, the letter U says, well, I'm going to attract to you everything that you're feeling. And it pulls in the emotional mess around it into its cup. And then the next letter, I, in suicide, represents rapid event. So it means it's like a lightning bolt. It just means instant. So you've got an emotional stable, unstable person attracting negative things into their life, and then all of a sudden they have the ability to do an instant event. And the word side, as in the latter part of suicide, the letter C represents emotion, growth, creativity. I means, the letter I means, again, rapid or fast. The letter D means structure and building, and the letter E means expansion. So when you look at suicide, herbicide, pesticide, genocide, it means death of life. So the letters SUI represent a collection of bad things ahead of good things. And so therefore suicide has a footprint, I find, when people pass that number, pops up in their names. Their names and their birth dates identify that kind of condition. Now, I'm not a person who is suicidal even when I've had some pretty, pretty heavy despair in my life. So why is it different for me? It comes down to those who are unable to handle it. And that then comes back to the conditioning when they were young. And this is where I find out helping the youth is most important to me, because the children that we have today are our future. And unfortunately, cell phones came along. When I looked at what was happening many years ago and I saw these games and things coming on and people gluing their faces to these screens, I said, we're now meeting a major change in our life. This is bad. Because when you have a person who's fixated on getting emotional energy from a device, their minds are being trained differently. And even the work I've done as an electrician inside military bases, all of the training areas are filled with computers which have war games on them. And these people are literally gaming, shooting, killing, blowing up and destroying, and they love it.
But that's deliberately done in the military, isn't it, to desensitise people?
Correct, but we have this on games.
Yes.
And these kids are being, not sensitised for, should I say, they're being trained to think it's nothing.
Well, my kids weren't allowed to play those sorts of games, but yeah, I'm not sure how many parents are sticking up for that sort of principle these days.
The unfortunate part is we just have to look at the rising crime. We have to look at the rising suicide. Why? Because the government is pouring in millions of dollars into suicide agencies or people who've got trusts and charities and things to help them. No matter how much they pour in, and even recently in New Zealand, they've offered them, I think, another $80 million odd dollars. And the unfortunate part is suicide's still climbing.
Yes.
So I've taken my knowledge to government on three occasions and at the top. And on three occasions, they all seem interested, but you never hear anything else about it. So it has to make you wonder.
Yes, well, I guess there's this idea that here is something new and, you know, we don't want to stick our necks out in case this guy's got it wrong or something.
Oh, look, I can understand that totally.
But, I mean, you don't have to be fatalistic, do you, about having suicide in your chart, because there are things that can mitigate that, aren't there?
Absolutely. In fact, exactly, well, 21 months ago, we had some friends pop into where we were living. They were friends to do with my wife's side. There's a child with him. It was a little 10-year-old boy. And his behaviour patterns alerted me, and I added up his name in my mind, and I thought, okay, this person's susceptible to emotional stuff. So I had a word with my wife to have a word with the mother of this child. And she came back, she said, yes, his son is really messed up. And I said, can I do some work on it? And they said, yes. So I just took his name and his birth date. That's all I took. I came back, going back with a little chart, and I said, this child is on the verge of suiciding. And the mother's fears came out, and she said, I've been thinking that. So she said, what do I do? This was December. And I said, pull the child from school. Is he getting bullied? Absolutely. Pull the child from school and do homeschooling. And because we've done that before with our own children, this is exactly what happened, and we helped her through it. Next thing you know, the child's attitude and energy change completely, and the child is roaring, wanting more knowledge. It was wonderful to see. Now, the child didn't suicide, but then how would you tell unless they did? This is the part that you're turning people's lives around, and I've done this more than once.
Right, right, yes.
Yeah. So statistics stand up, and I have been tested. I've been blind tested with this material that I do by the highest authority in the land. And this is part where they're just shaking their head saying, how the hell are you doing this?
Yes.
And it's a bit scary for people because, well, sometimes, I even did a show called The Time Lord, and I said I must be the only real Time Lord on the planet. But I can't leave and go into the future and back. I just read patterns ahead and therefore patterns in the past because we always live in the moment.
Yes, yes.
And the pattern around us change. The day the sun comes up and goes down, whether we're here or not on Earth, the sun will still come up and go down before we were born, during and afterwards. So there's a timing for things. All I'm saying is if you're aware of where you are, what you're meant to be doing in life, discover your purpose, get fulfilled, have a positive attitude, and wow, your life just takes off.
Yes, sometimes we need a little help from other people, though.
Totally. You can't do it alone.
Yeah. So, just, you were mentioning this boy who was only 10,
yep.
And I certainly was worried about my son when he was at intermediate, one of my sons. I think it's a vulnerable time. So, do you have any ideas around education that might be able to be helpful for the youth?
Oh, yeah. In fact, part when you mentioned about me running for mayor, it's one of my policies is to assist because I was asked it by the people in Auckland. What are your problems? And one girl said, education, what are you going to do about it? And I said, what's wrong? And then she said, we're not getting educated right. We're not understood. And I said, that would be right. They said, well, what would you do about it? And I said, well, here's her name. I won't say what her name was. I said, you're like this. And she said, how did you do that? And I said, you like doing this stuff. You don't like being where you are. And she said, absolutely. So I said, you've got to understand that you have a purpose based around information that I can give you from your personality type. So in schooling, the education system is set to create educated children like the teachers, like the professors. And I've heard this from professors themselves. The education system is designed to make teachers or professors. Other people drop out, which is what happens. So it's an unfair bias. If you were to help children from the get-go, based on their parents' ideals and love for what their children would be, and to discover that this child is a kinesthetic, give them blocks, boxes, things to pull apart and put back together again, and allow them to be the builders of this world, the mechanics and technicians and architects of life. Oh, what about this child? This child's designed for music, for dance, for creative artistic work, for decorating houses. Oh, so if you give children education suited to their personality and characteristic type, that child will flourish, and you don't need anything other than your maths and English to really help you along.
So the difficulty being, of course, that you stick 30 to 40 children in one room with a teacher, which makes that pretty difficult for the teacher. So the whole education system would have to be completely revamped, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would be. In fact, the education system could continue the same, but you would have segregated children. In other words, when kids did woodwork, the ones who liked woodwork did really well in woodwork, and some just didn't care. They would rather be doing it. In fact, it might be sewing, it might be cooking.
But they don't even have those things now.
No, and they should.
Yes.
It's just like they should have classes on social interaction, on finance and money and saving, and on thinking. If they had those classes, I think we'd be in a different world.
And politics.
I didn't want to mention that, but you're quite right. Because if we don't understand politics, what we're saying is, whoever rules me, it's okay. No, it's not okay.
Well, I know, because, I mean, an 18-year-old that I met said she was going to vote for John Key because he was the best looking. And I thought, well, if this is the level of education that these kids have had in a school that had a very good reputation, I may say, and they've come out like that, how are they going to be responsible?
Yeah, they can't be. We are all naturally attracted to beauty. If you see a pretty flower, you'll catch your eye. You see a pretty girl, if you're a guy, it catches your eye. And girls seeing the guys they like, catches your eye. I was doing a charity thing last night, for example, and a guy sat down in front of me. And during the course, he said, you're very well dressed. And I said, thank you. He said, you just look tidy. And I said, well, that's just presenting myself to people so that they feel comfortable. If I came and sat in my, I call them my fluffies, which and just a loose slack top that I might wear at home when I'm doing crazy work from starting too early, I wouldn't be doing that in public because you don't have the same reflection in their eyes of having seriousness about who you are and what you're doing. So, yeah, there's a lot to do with appearance. John Key probably looked more attractive than others. I mean, I've seen
not
some
my
of the,
type.
The other politicians out there. Some of them look pretty bad.
Yes.
But this is it. Their mothers love them. And in reality, when you start to talk to somebody, their beauty oozes out of their body. I remember just sitting with people who have felt really depressed, and I'm seeing this wonderful, gorgeous person in front of me, and it's big, they think that they're ugly. They're not. There's beauty inside. It's lovely.
Yes, yes. Just going back to telecommunications, tell me, Peter, what about 5G? Have you done any numerology on 5G? This is coming down, and there's a lot of people in Auckland who are not happy about it.
Well, I'm happy to say it's one of my policies. It's being eradicated as far as I'm concerned. 5G, or fifth generation, 5G is its nickname, its shortened version. So it's fifth generation, F-I-F-T-H is the word. And when you add fifth generation together, you get the number 16 comes out. And the number 16 is the number that is a big lesson learner. It's to do with health. Now, 16 is a number that needs respect. If you ever see a house that's number 16, sometimes it's a seven house. They call them seven houses. They seem a bit tacky in some ways, even in nice areas. They could have, excuse me, a bit of longer grass or unkempt outside part. And it's to do with this number 16. So every time I see it, I used to think, ooh, this could be improved. And yet it's the number of brilliance and intelligence and deep thinking. So fifth generation represents ill health because it gives off a microwave. Now, we have radio waves, which we've been involved in, well, should I say we live in the atmosphere of radio waves and have done for a long time. But fifth generation was designed originally as a military weapon. And what it does is it has a narrow band. Do you know when you do zigzag on, you're doing on sewing, you've got a zigzag stitch?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, that zigzag stitch is a bit like what 5G looks like. It's a very narrow, instead of a very wide band, which targets things. And when it targets something, it's putting a solid beam, like a laser beam, onto a target. And that area cooks if you get in front of it. It runs out of energy pretty quickly when it's going from the transmitter to its receiver. That's why they've got to have so many so close everywhere. The unfortunate part is it's not tested safe. It's being tested, it works. It's been not tested safe. Therefore, it should not be rolled out. And many countries, and I believe just the other day I heard Coromandel has banned 5G antenna.
Right.
And if that's great. That's wonderful. The 5G, the power that runs them is huge. Now, here's something really funny. The fastest form of communication comes through fiber. Fiber is light. You can't go faster than light on this planet as far as science is concerned at the base levels. There's actually other things which are faster. However, when you have a fiber going up a pole that's got a 5G generator at the top, you've got to convert it from light to generator, send it through the atmosphere, and it receives on a receiver, and gets turned back into fiber again. I mean, what? Why not just take the fiber straight from the ground, straight to the houses, which is what they're doing normally? The unfortunate part is, why is 5G actually being rolled out without any consideration for the dangers, unless there's something else that is being rolled out for? And that's where conspiracy stuff comes in, and I don't want to get into that area at the moment. It's just a dangerous medium of communication.
Well, if you had a government that was, let's say, suddenly we landed up with a far-right racist government that might want to stop protests against them, then they can beam that 5G down on the people.
Correct.
And we would feel, because I'd be there, and we'd be burned.
We'd be burned.
Yeah. And even if they did it so that it was only to the painful level and not to the injury level, it would still be pretty horrendous. Far worse than a water cannon or a tear gas, which is what they do for demonstrations overseas at the moment.
Correct. The higher the technology comes in as time goes by, the more effective certain weapons, and I'll call it a weapon, can be used. If you look at a cell phone and you purchase it, in the very smallest print, in the manual, it says in there, do not hold close to the skin by about two or three centimetres. Keep it away from your skin.
Yes.
So people don't know that and they have them up against their heads. Now, the energy given off that is powerful around the device that's transmitting. When you're looking at a weapon as such, 5G therefore could be used to affect people on a slow, I don't mean slow kill, a slow ailment developing condition. Now, what about young girls? When a young girl is born, which when girls are born, they've got all of their eggs inside the child developed.
Yes.
Now, if those things are damaged or hurt through a slow cooking process, that they're damaged, you are not going to have children.
But they have developed 5G nappies that they can put on children that will alert the mother to when the nappy's wet. And they've got 5G cribs for the babies to be in.
That's right.
I mean, I would think that that is insanity to the extreme.
It is. It's called Smart City.
But the other thing is, thinking about how Spark had trouble broadcasting the Rugby World Cup, it didn't work very well, okay? Now, if we're going to have driverless cars, and we have that sort of situation, we're going to have some pretty horrendous crashes, aren't we?
Oh, yeah. Now, just going back to that, I don't follow football to the degree. I mean, I'd listen to the end of it, and I thought, oh, that's okay, it's great fun, on radio. However, when you think about it, what if the communication systems and networks at the moment aren't quite capable of sending or transmitting that information, that 5G would do the job? Is it possibly a ploy that could be saying, you have to get into 5G here so you can really get this transmission status all sorted out? Who would know?
Ah, that's an interesting idea too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. So you make a problem, you think, oh, there's a solution, 5G. Your rubbish bin's full, 5G. Your fridge is telling you it's got butter needed or whatever, 5G. No, that's not my cup of tea.
No, we don't need that.
Oh, I mean, people will, because look, the new iPhones are coming out, and wow, but here's an interesting point.
The new iPhones are not 5G compatible.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Here's an interesting thing. They're not, and they are not going to produce 5G in their phones for at least 12 months until they see what's happening.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes. I think that's very interesting, yeah. So I think I have to get a new phone before they decide to put them in.
Well, you can always stay in 4G. It's no problem.
Actually, my phone stays on 3G because where I live, the 4G doesn't work.
Wow.
Yeah, so
I've got smoke signals at my place.
That might be a good idea, but not for polluting the atmosphere.
No, that's right. That's right. I call it steam then.
So, now, what about 1080? Because, you know, Auckland, you may think, oh, we don't have 1080 because we're a city, but we've got the Hanua Rangers and we've got the Waitakere Rangers, haven't we?
Yep, we have.
So what do you think about 1080?
I absolutely outlaw it. It's got, look, there's one place in the world where 1080, the chemical in 1080, it eludes me what its name was now, but that chemical grows naturally in the southwestern Australia. And the animals and insects that live in that area eat 1080 material, natural stuff. Now, other animals, if they're introduced to it, they die, they just killed.
Right.
That's toxic to them. So that's adaptability in nature. Now, when you have a 1080 spread, thrown down by aircraft to try and control opossums and rats and things, it's not identifying a possum or a rat. It's identifying anything that eats it, picks it up, swallows it down, gets into a stream. The freshwater crayfish die, as we have seen is happening. The birds' population is quietening down. The insects, also interestingly enough, seem to be vanishing a little bit more.
Oh, well, 1080 is an insecticide. That was what it was originally made for.
Well, somebody mentioned to me the other day, have you noticed that we don't have the same bugs at night time on our windscreens as we used to have? I thought that, I never thought of it, but yes, that's right. And this is the indiscriminate killing by a particular poison that I think is just it's an easy or a cheat's way out. It's disgusting. In fact, they even have what's left over. Tons of it is thrown into landfills.
Yes.
And, of course, landfills leach.
Yes.
It's horrific. So I'm dead against 1080, and I'm dead against 5G at this stage because it's not proven safe.
How about spraying the berms with Roundup?
Oh, glyphosate.
That's what I said.
Yeah, no, it's got to be steam or some other way. Weed eat them. Get people on machines. We used to have our berms mowed, if you remember.
Yes.
Yeah, so therefore, no, this is just another way of people cutting costs, and I totally disagree with it. And some people say it's safe, but hang on, there are other chemists and people who say it's not safe. And when you hear things such as, I can't use brand names here, but there are people who are producing or pushing products in their home and around the garden and whatnot, but the people who make them, I knew one, and he got very, very sick on the toxicity of the chemicals involved in it, but they're not broadcast as such.
Yes, this is the thing where we're not told when things are dangerous.
Correct. That's why you've got to gown up and put gloves on when you spray the safe product. If it's that safe, you wouldn't be doing it. So it takes the initiative of a person to look at what they've got before they use something.
Right. Yes. So how about transport in Auckland? I mean, let's face it, that's the biggie, isn't it, transport?
Oh, yeah.
And what do you think, first of all, about this idea of getting people out of cars?
Well, Auckland is not like Holland. Auckland is not like Australia. These or continents, these are flat. Auckland is bumpy, hilly, narrow-necked. It's like a woman's waist, if you use that as an argument, coming from down and in like that. And we've got this. It's both sides of the are covered by ocean. It's only 4 kilometres or something apart from the creeks. So is it okay for cyclists to go up and down over these hills? Not everybody. No one's an enthusiast that much that everybody's an enthusiast. So when you start to narrow up the roads, shut down the streets, stop cars coming into the city, how do you get in there? Because not everybody goes to work parks and goes to an office. The city is a hub of activity. Now, I've done a lot of work in this area, and there are ways to fix it really quickly, but I'm really upset by the way that they're closing the roads down. That's just wrong. It's absolutely wrong. Was there consultation with the people? No. Was there any reason why they're doing it? Yes, it's actually been, in fact, it was just been broadcast on the web and I've been watching film on it. People inside council have been consulting with government at the present stage and they've been told to narrow the roads up, squash it up, keep the cars out of the city. They're changing the lights on the roads to favour the pedestrians to annoy the motorists. This is absolutely out of order, out of control. And so to overcome those problems, yes, public transport. But public transport should be free. And everybody would use it then.
Well, if you call it public, you wouldn't think it was actually private, but it is actually private, really.
At the moment, and it should go back to being something which could be used by the city. When you're looking at putting in $4.2 billion into a single railway track that goes from Auckland out to the airport, you can't lift the track up and move it to this place and move it to that place. It's a track. And for actually 80% cheaper than that, you can get trackless trains that run on the roads that exist. The roads exist. So here we have a train that runs on the road, like a bus, but it's a train. These things take 300 to 500 people, and they are 80% cheaper. The latest technology, Japan uses them, China uses them, Brazil uses them, Australia uses them. Why aren't New Zealanders using them?
You'd rather that than a monorail.
Oh, no. Monorails are part of the trackless trains in that respect because they're not running on the ground.
Yes.
Yeah. So, no, I'm in favour. There's actually trains that go up on pedestal. They're like a monorail, but they run on air. In other words, they have big paddles underneath them inside a tube and they're pushed along by air. They've got no engines, no electricity in them. That would be dangerous, or motors and big things that are heavy. And Brazil has been using them for decades.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. So when you start to look around, we are being duped by a government that has, I believe, hands in other people's pockets.
Well, I'm certainly convinced that there's something going on around cycleways.
Yep.
And it maybe began with John Key and now it's moved to Julianne Jenter.
Yep. Cycleways were tourism. Now we've got problems where you're saying no tradie can get on a push bike and go to work. No executive will get on a push bike in their suit and their briefcase and go to work. No, this is nonsense. In fact, if you go out, like anybody, get enthusiastic and go and look for the bikes on the roads. The only ones who are really on the roads are main cyclists, people who will drive in the traffic. They don't care. They're really good at what they do, and they don't get hurt or killed. They can upset a driver, but that would be kind of like just watching yourself for what you're doing.
Well, I don't see cycleways as being safer anyway, because cars still back out of driveways and cars still open their doors. So cyclists are still, to my mind, very vulnerable.
Yeah,
I've got a son who cycles for fun at the weekends. And he uses cycleways wonderfully. But, you know, where I live, near where I live, there's Portage Road and it's got cycleways. I never see a bike on it.
Correct. So therefore, why are they doing it? Why not use
ahead? Yeah, there's some business reason.
Now, we don't have a berm control anymore. We don't have to mow our lawns on the berms because, oh, actually, we do have to mow them because they don't mow them for us. We could open up footpaths and make them wider than where they are now without doing any other damage to the road and make them split. So you've got pedestrian and cycleways, as they have in other places all around the world and in some places in New Zealand. They don't want this. There's another agenda.
Yes, because, I mean, unless you're really in town, you don't see many people walking on the footpaths either, do you?
Correct.
So we've got all these footpaths and cycleways that are not really used much, and the roads that are, I mean, it would be great to have fantastic public transport, but I suppose we have to wait for a little while.
No, they could be actually done overnight. I don't really mean that. They're right. Available. I've got people already I've been talking to.
Yes.
Whether I became mayor or not makes no difference to me because I've still got power, or waste-to-power plants on tech. I can just call them into New Zealand. They'll be here. I've got public transport with those monorails and trains that people are talking to me about already who have the contracts ready to go. All they need is the okay. Now, that part there is just instant.
Yes.
So it won't take long.
Okay.
Not like these billions of dollars of underground work. Did you know that that'll blow out too? Because they've already made a public notice a few months back now. They don't know whether the train track will marry up with the main trunk line as it gets toward the airport because communications aren't going to fit or work. And they said that might be another $5 billion.
Oh, dear.
And so, therefore, Auckland is now below water. We're below water. The water level's above our head. We're drowning in debt.
Yes.
We cannot borrow anymore because what the government has done, and if you think about it, a mayor is only a temporary employee, as is a prime minister.
Yes.
So they're not long term. Therefore, you've got people who don't care. They've made their money, done the job for somebody else perhaps, and then it's who's going to handle it next. Auckland, if it's in debt that much, the unfortunate part is people are going to be stuck and they're not going to be able to do anything about it.
Well, Peter, if you become the mayor, I hope you won't stop using your numerology.
No.
Because that will warn you of things that may come.
Yes, numerology is a knowledge that should be taught in schools. It would help people identify a purpose in life, where the fun is in their life, how to avoid problems. I mean, we think when we make a mistake and we say, oh, we won't do that again, and all of a sudden somebody else comes along and you think, oh, it won't happen here because they're different, and the same thing happens. This is where I can come. Well, not me, but anybody could come in, because what I do is teachable. It
yes.
can be learned, and it's actually got tools now on computers. That means it's real.
Okay. Okay. Well, good luck.
Luck is labour under correct knowledge, and the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Okay, well, yeah. that's wonderful. Thank you so much for coming in today, and all the very best.
I've really enjoyed it, Lisa. It's been fun doing this with you, and I appreciate you asking me to come in and have a good chat on it. So, thank you.
Thank you.
I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 400 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and love us. This is Tim Lynch.
And or Lisa Eyre.
And Liz Gunn.
In the spirit of Aroha. wishing you a wonderful week. We look forward to being with you next week. I say, kia kaha and haere ura.